you're telling me that what they secretly were trying to do was eliminate the governor's veto authority, but they never mentioned that.
It wasn't a secret, Your Honor.
The court case over Governor Walker's veto of half of the PFD. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, November 17th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, remembering Nome Nugget editor and publisher Nancy McGuire, who died this morning.
She held strong opinions and didn't mind sharing those.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Governor Bill Walker's veto of half of the permanent fund dividend will stand for now. A judge found today the governor has the authority to cut the money. APRN and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
In a lawsuit, Senator Bill Welikowski is seeking to reverse Governor Walker's veto of nearly $700 million. He argued in court that the constitutional amendment establishing the permanent fund also allowed the legislature to dedicate money that governors can't veto. But Anchorage Superior Court Judge William Moore said there's no record that lawmakers wanted to eliminate governors' power to veto parts of the budget. In an exchange with Welikowski, Moore said if they wanted to make such a big change, they would have said something about it.
You're telling me that what they secretly were trying to do was eliminate the governor's veto authority. But they never mentioned that.
It wasn't a secret, Your Honor. We think it's very clear that if the legislature is allowed to dedicate funds for a specific purpose, then it just naturally flows from that. The
government I should assume that you are speaking now and there are words you are not mentioning. But in reality, that's what you're talking about?
Walker's veto cut the dividend from a little more than $2,000 per Alaskan to just over $1,000. While Walker says the decision was painful, it was necessary to preserve dividends into the future and to help close the state's budget gap. Opponents say the state should have cut the gap other ways, such as raising oil and gas taxes or cutting more state spending before considering a PFD cut. Assistant Attorney General Margaret Payton Walsh defended Walker's position. She said that other than money set aside for the permanent fund itself, the legislature appropriates all state spending each year, including the permanent fund dividends, and the governor can veto any of that money.
I mean, the reality is the legislature has been appropriating this money throughout the history of the dividend program.
Moore says the Alaska Constitution gives the governor a lot of power to veto spending. He notes it takes a three-quarters vote of the legislature to override a budget veto.
That's an enormous dislocation of legislative power, and it gives to the governor in this unique field an enormous amount of authority to eliminate spending. I don't think that the permanent fund amendment intended to eliminate the governor's role in the spending of the income from the principal of the permanent fund.
After about an hour and a half of oral arguments, Morris immediately gave his verdict from the bench. The state won. The plaintiffs lost.
I applaud both sides for very fine briefing, very fine and helpful oral argument, and I wish all of you the best of luck in front of the Supreme Court.
Welikowski and his fellow plaintiffs, former legislators Clem Tillian and Rick Halford, are expected to appeal soon. And with no facts in dispute, the court could make a final determination on the case quickly. Walker says he's pleased with the timeliness of the ruling, and it allows his administration to continue focusing on resolving the deficit. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The Alaska Native Corporation representing the North Slope has bought two federal leases in the Beaufort Sea, formerly owned by Shell. That gives the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, or ASRC, the right to explore for oil and gas in the Arctic Ocean. Such offshore drilling has historically been controversial. Rex Rock Sr. is president and CEO of ASRC. He announced yesterday that the corporation has acquired Shell's leases in Camden Bay, just off the coast of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Shell halted its efforts to drill in the Arctic last year after spending billions on an unsuccessful exploration campaign. But Rock says Shell's failure doesn't mean there isn't opportunity for oil and gas development.
We all know how the Chukchi effort ended. Yet we know there is still tremendous potential in Alaska's offshore.
Rock made the announcement at a conference hosted by the Resource Development Council in Anchorage. The Interior Department is expected to announce this week whether it will include the Arctic in its plan for offshore oil and gas leasing over the next 5 years. That decision won't affect existing leases like the ones bought by ASRC, but will signal whether the region is available to industry going forward. Alaska Natural Resources Commissioner Andy Mack says ASRC's willingness to take on the Camden Bay leases is a sign of local support for offshore drilling and should signal to the federal government that the Arctic must remain open to oil and gas development.
For ASRC to take this step out and say, we believe that we can do this and we believe that this can be done safely and we're doing this on behalf of our shareholders should speak volumes to the conversation that's going on and the analysis being conducted in Washington, D.C.
Alaska officials and the oil industry have strongly advocated for Arctic leases to be included in the five-year plan. Environmental groups oppose their inclusion due to concerns about climate change and impacts to wildlife. ConocoPhillips is looking to leave the natural gas business in Cook Inlet. The company said today it's putting its Kenai LNG plant up for sale. For nearly 50 years, the plant was the only export facility of domestic liquefied natural gas in North America. In an emailed statement, spokeswoman Amy Burnett says Conoco wants to focus on its North Slope operations. The Kenai LNG plant processed natural gas from Cook Inlet, and nearly all of its product was sold to Japanese utilities. The plant is not part of the state's Alaska LNG project, which calls for a much larger liquefaction plant to be built nearby. The Kenai plant operated for just 6 months in 2015. Burnett says because of market conditions, it has not exported gas this year. But the plant is still operational and could start exporting again. It's the second year the company has sought to drop Cook Inlet assets. In 2015, it put its natural gas production assets up for sale. It sold its North Cook Inlet field to Hillcorp in late October. ConocoPhillips also sold its stake in the Beluga gas field to the city of Anchorage earlier this year. On Wednesday, an Anchorage grand jury charged 63-year-old Paul Allen Harris with one count of kidnapping, two counts of sexual abuse of a minor in the first degree, and one count of sexual abuse of a minor in the second degree. Harris has been in custody since June after a man reported his daughter was kidnapped and sexually abused by Harris. If convicted, Harris faces 99 years in prison. He is scheduled to be arraigned tomorrow. The Alaska Municipal League meets in Anchorage this week. The annual convention brings together local government officials to discuss common concerns like fiscal issues, clean water and sanitation, and how to meet state and federal requirements with too few staff. Wednesday, participants packed a downtown hotel ballroom to attend a panel discussion on one health problem all Alaska communities are grappling with, heroin addiction. Alaska Public Media's Ellen Lockyer has the story.
Back in August of this year, Senator Dan Sullivan hosted the Alaska Wellness Summit in Palmer to bring together health care providers in hopes of combating opioid addiction. One of the featured speakers was U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy. Today, Dr. Murthy released a report showing more than 20.8 million people in the United States are living with a substance abuse disorder. Although the report covers all drug addiction, it indicates more people use opioids than use tobacco, and it links prescription opioid abuse to heroin addiction. Long thought a big city problem, the tentacles of heroin use have reached into almost every Alaska community.
But science doesn't get us anywhere. I know we have an epidemic. I hear it's coming into the internet. You can get it through the post office. I hear it comes through barges and We have no way of controlling it. And then we have another issue. We have the Northwoods Passage that's opening, and you know there's constantly traffic coming in to and fro, and it seems like we're putting money. We're trying to find the answer, and yet we're always hitting that stumbling block, and it's always finances.
That's Carolyn Cannon from Point Hope, who lost a child to overdose. She told the Alaska Municipal League panel that a lack of finances is one block to providing better prevention of and care for addiction. Alaska State Trooper Colonel Jim Cockrell told the crowd that once heroin hits the streets of their town, law enforcement has already lost the battle.
Most of your drugs in Alaska come from air. From the state ferry, when you live in Southeast, they're coming in from Bellingham and bringing up drugs. FedEx, the post office is probably the biggest carrier of drugs in Alaska. Our focus has always been trying to get it before it gets delivered to the dealers.
Cockrell said heroin is in every coastal community in the state and implored community members to work with troopers on providing timely information on drug dealing in their villages. The effect of heroin use in Alaska villages can be devastating, as Michelle Matthews, a city administrator from Quinnahock, told the crowd.
We had an overdose. 5 people overdosed in a community of 700. And there was no help at the time. All our health aides, and we only have a handful of them, they had to be there trying to revive people. One person died and another one was revived, and the other 3 almost died.
Beside the obvious health risks and its impact on families, addiction also diverts scarce cash out of villages and into drug dealers' pockets. Recent developments in the science behind brain chemistry have altered the view of addiction from that of a moral failing to the recognition of addiction as a brain disease, says Dr. Joshua Sonkis with Fairbanks Mental Health Service.
It's not an easy thing to just expect it to go away. It probably won't. It's a chronic illness.
Sonkis says treated addicts have a 40% to 60% relapse rate. The state's Opioid Policy Task Force is taking a public health approach to combating the opioid epidemic, starting with recommendations related to healthy child development. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new Alaska Native language app.
Not only can these languages be modern, but they are modern. I mean, you can type them on your phone, you can text in them, you can send a Snapchat. What's more modern than that?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Early this morning, longtime Nome Nugget editor and publisher Nancy McGuire died. McGuire had been battling cancer, and in her last editorial bid a fond farewell to her beloved Nome community and residents. John Handelin is a former mayor of Nome and was a longtime friend of the tenacious journalist. He says McGuire was born and raised on a Pennsylvania farm. She became an educator and moved to Nome in 1973, then bought the Nome Nugget in 1982. He says she was proud that the paper is the oldest in Alaska. McGuire was given the Alaska Press Club First Amendment Award in 2012. Handelin says he got to know her when he became mayor in 1985 and was sometimes taken to task in her paper.
There were times when I was on the receiving end of chastising in her paper or her editorial, but over the years we maintained a friendship, and certainly over the last couple of years we've cemented that to a greater degree.
What do you think kept her in Nome for so long? She could have done the work that she was doing in her home state of Pennsylvania or other places. Why Nome?
Nancy enjoyed the outdoors here, some of the offerings that we have. She spent a lot of time out in the country, always having at least two, if not more, dogs that she took in, and along with her pets and friends, getting out into the beautiful expanse that we have, I think was something that really drove her to stay in our area.
John, you knew Nancy for 30 years. How important has her work at the helm of the Nome Nugget been? What has it meant for Nome and the surrounding communities, especially before the time of so much information available on the internet?
As technology has changed, Nancy still believed that having a written documentation and something that could serve as a journal for the community was very important. Of course, as time went on, she advanced to utilizing the internet as well with online edition, something that she took pride in, and actually we need to credit her with the starting of the internet and email service here in Nome. Nome.net was something that she formed and was the first ISP to serve our community.
For those who didn't know her, what would you want them to know about Nancy the person beyond her professional work as a journalist and as an editor? What would you want folks to know to help them understand her passion and her place in the Nome community?
Nancy may have at times come off as being a little gruff. Certainly she didn't have any issue taking folks to task if she thought that they were wrong. She held strong opinions and didn't mind sharing those. But I think that also in all of her efforts, she tried to be unbiased in her news reporting and simply stating the facts and ensuring that the community was well informed of the activities ongoing here.
Nancy McGuire was 72 when she died this morning. A funeral mass will be held at the St. Joseph Catholic Church in Nome at 2 p.m. on Saturday. It's been 4 months since the fishing vessel Alaska Jura sank in the Bering Sea, and the U.S. Coast Guard is still trying to figure out why its engine room flooded, forcing 46 crew members to abandon ship near Kiska Island. Lieutenant Arvin Garcia leads the Investigations Division for Coast Guard Sector Anchorage. He says investigators have scheduled 2 weeks of public hearings in Seattle to determine why the 220-foot trawler went down.
What has happened since the sinking is that the investigation team has identified witness and has developed theories as to what caused the sinking. And so the hearing, it's in like a public forum to interview these witnesses and to fully explore those theories.
Those theories won't be made public until the hearings next month. Neither will the names of witnesses. But Garcia says there's a reason the interviews are happening in Seattle.
That's where the vessel is homeported. The owners are homeported there. And a lot of the crew members are from Seattle.
If investigators find the flooding was caused by human error or wrongdoing, the Coast Guard can impose fines or take action against mariners' credentials. Garcia says it's hard to predict how much the investigation will reveal because investigators can't examine the sunken vessel.
That is a challenge for us. So the witness testimony is going to be really important for this case. So we can get an insight as to what the condition of the boat was, what was the overall work climate of the boat.
The Alaska Jurus was owned by the Fishing Company of Alaska. Another FCA ship, the Alaska Ranger, sank and killed 5 people in 2008. While the National Transportation Safety Board determined the company failed to maintain a third vessel, the Alaska Spirit, when it caught fire in 1995. The company did not return phone calls seeking comment. Witness hearings will begin on December 5th. The Coast Guard is working to finish the Alaska Jurus investigation by July.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment. On the web at arcticwirerope.com. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Riding state ferries may cost a little more this summer. The Alaska Marine Highway System plans its next round of price changes to start on May 1st. That's when the new summer schedule begins. Spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says it's the second year of a five-year effort to equalize ticket prices.
What we're trying to do is bring similar distance fares into a similar price across the entire system. So you're getting what you pay for no matter where you are in the system.
Most fare hikes are small, and an adult passenger sailing from Juneau to Ketchikan will pay $4 more. A Kodiak to Homer ticket is up $2, and a Bellingham, Washington to Skagway ticket, one of the longer routes, will increase by $13. A few routes will have lower ticket prices. For example, an adult passenger traveling from Cordova to Whittier will pay $3 less. The new May to September schedule was released on Wednesday. Sailings are actually up for the busier months, June through August, but Woodrow says they're down for the full next budget year, which begins in July.
Where we've been able to reduce the frequency of sailings has been more in the shoulder season, say late April, early May, and then late September, where we kind of reduce just a week so here and there for each ship.
He says the summer schedule was developed around the governor's proposed budget. It calls for a 5% cut in unrestricted general fund spending. The legislature could further reduce the Marine Highway budget. Woodrow says any such cuts would come out of next fall and winter-spring schedule. An Alaska commercial fishing advocacy group is beginning to get an idea of what its new Salmon Habitat Information Program, or SHIP, will look like. The program is aimed at engaging commercial fishermen around the state in salmon habitat issues. United Fishermen of Alaska, which represents 35 Alaska commercial fishing organizations, conducted a fisherman survey this summer. SHIP Director Lindsay Bloom says they were asked to list their priorities.
Fishermen, while they're concerned about a variety of issues, mining, climate change, and pollution scored the highest. And at a local level, people mentioned the pebble mine, the proposed pebble mine, and mining development in the transboundary region as the most mentioned specific concerns.
Fishermen's worries about mining reaffirmed UFA's previous advocacy for State Department involvement in transboundary mining. But Bloom says the industry group hasn't been heavily involved in climate change issues. She says the SHIP program will invite experts to UFA board meetings and engage the group in decision-making at the local, state, and federal level. When asked to rank several predetermined issues, fishermen contacted in the survey said habitat conservation ranked third behind quality, product quality, and fisheries management. Bloom said all three issues were more important to fishermen than the price they got for their catches.
I found that very inspiring that there's sort of that very clear value and recognition that protecting habitat and protecting the resource is more important than sort of like the bottom line of what we're getting paid for salmon.
When it comes to obtaining information on the commercial industry, most listed Alaska Department of Fish and Game scientists as the most trusted source.
And they're closely followed by local or regional fishing groups and then United Fishermen of Alaska.
Fishermen also think the state is doing well ensuring the stability of salmon fisheries. The survey did not ask about further budget cuts to Fish and Game during the state legislature's upcoming session. Bloom says the goal of the program is to focus UFA's engagement on salmon habitat issues important to Alaska's fishing fleet and help fishermen inform decisions and policy. More than 500 people responded to the survey. Bloom says the program is open to everyone, not just UFA members. When Barrow officially changes its name back to Utqiagvik on December 1st, people all over are going to encounter the same typographical challenge, writing out the dotted G the name's sixth character. Alaska Native languages have faced a growing technological challenge, meshing alphabets with all the new tools for communicating like texting or Facebook. But now, as Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, there's an app for that.
For the first time ever, you can find all the characters for the 20 recognized Alaska Native languages in one place. A keyboard right on your iPhone. An app called Chert pulls in the characters you need to spell out words in Yupik, Inupiaq, Tlingit, and more. It was designed by two brothers from Kotzebue.
Honestly, I think the main reason I wanted to do it is because I was trying to learn Inupiaq, and there's all sorts of like cool apps that you can put on your phone. But if you can't type the characters right, they're not very useful. And if you can't type the characters right, it's hard to text with other learners.
Reed Magdans reached out to language experts around the state, collecting the right characters for all the alphabets. His brother, who lives in California, did the coding. They made a similar keyboard for Inupiaq last year over Christmas. It was a success, and over the last 6 months, the two expanded their efforts. The brothers aren't making money from the free app. They see it as a contribution to the state's ongoing language revitalization. Reed Magdans says that historically, colonial governments, educators, and missionaries saw Alaska's indigenous languages as backwards, simplistic, and anti-modern. A falsehood that he thinks technology can help correct.
For all this app is kind of a small step, it's also something of a symbolically important one, because it's saying to the world that not only can these languages be modern, but they are modern. I mean, you can type them on your phone, you can text in them, you can send a Snapchat. What's more modern than that?
The name Chert came from a stone traditionally used to fashion spear points, arrowheads, and other tools. Magdans says they wanted a name that symbolized a connection between the past and the present, a bit like a language connects a speaker to the people who came before them. Unlike a spear point, though, this Chert takes just a few minutes to install.
So you just go to the App Store and search Chert, C-H-E-R-T, and it should show up there.
So far, they've only developed the app for the iPhone's operating system, but are working on one for Android devices, too. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Elizabeth Harbaugh, Zachariah Hughes, Ellen Lockyer, and Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Laura Craigle in Unalaska, and Aaron Bolton in Wrangell. Our editor and producer is Sean Dugan. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. It's a fact, 85% of Alaska Native and American Indian people don't use illegal drugs. For more resources on building a healthy life, visit anthc.org/weare. This message sponsored by ANTHC, a nonprofit organization.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.